Please lower your head and watch your step while boarding.
Welcome to the Attractions Podcast. You are all clear for dispatch. Have fun.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Attractions Podcast, sponsored by MEI and Mouse Fan Travel. I am Seth.
And I'm Blake.
And we are here to talk to you about the latest and greatest in theme park news and more, as well as what's going on in our own lives. And as you folks at home can see, Carly, our usual co-host, is absent this week, but she will be back real soon. In her place, stepping in is Blake. Thank you so much for joining us. He's a reporter for us here at Attractions Magazine, and I'm going to turn the mic over so he can introduce himself to all of you joining us today.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. Thanks, Seth. My name is Blake. I'm local to Charlotte, North Carolina. So my home park is Carowinds, owned by Cedar Fair here, not too far away from me. We'll be talking about Carowinds a little bit later on in the show. Yeah, Disney College Program alumni. I've loved the parks for a long time, and happy to now report about them.
Well, I would love to talk to you sometime about the Disney College Program, because that was something that I thought of doing and didn't do. And sometimes I think I missed out on something, and sometimes I think I dodged a bullet. So I'd love to hear your perspective sometime. But I really want to thank you for joining us today. I'm a fan of the articles. A lot of time we discuss the articles that you've written for the website on this show, and we are definitely going to be talking about a couple of them today. So it's great to have you join us in person. As for myself, I had a kind of quiet week, went to visit some family on the coast instead of hanging out in the theme parks, because it's been very, very busy with spring break in the parks this week. But this past week, I did get to do one really fun thing. I was out at Aquatica, which is SeaWorld Orlando's water park. I was there with our publisher, Matt, and our reporter, Andy. And I got to be one of the first riders on Tassie's Underwater Twist, which is a new version of an existing water slide. It's a bowl water slide that's been there since the park opened, but it used to be kind of an open bowl with no real theming. Now they have covered the top of it and put projectors inside, making what I believe is the first, at least in Florida, immersive, media-based water slide here in the area. And it was a lot of fun. I got to do it twice. It's a family slide. You sit on a raft, and as long as you can hold yourself upright and not fall through the tube, you can ride it. There's no height requirement. So it's something that the whole family can get into. It's got a little bit of acceleration at the beginning, and then it's actually quite beautiful inside. It's computer generated real-time images of fish, sharks, even a whale from the Australian reef. And, it's kind of a little Windows 98 screensaver-ish, but it's also really pretty and soothing. And you kind of make, two, three, four laps around the bowl, depending on how heavy your raft is, and get, there's atmospheric music. And it's the closest thing to a soothing water slide experience that I've had. So if you are at Aquatica this spring break, it opened up this past weekend, and it's got two slides for a capacity of about 500 people an hour, which is small for, a theme park ride, but pretty good for a water slide. So definitely be sure to check that out. It's in the part of the park that it's surrounded by the Lazy River, which is another thing I kind of like about the design. You can get in the Lazy River and then hop out, do a water slide, and then get right back in the Lazy River. So
I watched the video of the slide. It looked, yes. I'm glad you said you go around it a couple times while you're in there, because I felt like I just want to sit in there and just vibe.
Yeah, you kind of, you've got this initial descent tunnel, which is really dark, and then you open up into this bright blue circular, and you kind of swirl around, and at first you're going forward, but then every time I did, at least, you sort of hit this moment where you kind of turn sideways and just sort of rotate and drift around, and it's a really fun sensation, kind of like... almost like the water slide equivalent of that moment at the beginning of Guardians of the Galaxy after you launch into the main show building and you kind of rotate around in the dark and you're sort of turning and moving at the same time, get that floating feeling. Okay. So similar to that, but a much more toned down water slide moment like that. So yeah, definitely worth checking out if you are enjoying Aquatica this season. All right. Well, without any further ado, it is time for us to jump into the news in the queue. First up, we are starting at the Universal Parks, where the Wizarding Worlds of Harry Potter are celebrating a brand new made-up holiday. There's a lot of made-up holidays, but this is one I can actually kind of get into. Because from March 15th through April 30th, both Universal Orlando and Universal Studios Hollywood are celebrating Butterbeer season. Yes, that is a whole month and a half devoted to everyone's favorite wizarding beverage. If you somehow have been, I don't know, hiding under a leaky cauldron for the last decade and don't know what Butterbeer is, it's something that was invented for the Harry Potter books and brought to life in the theme parks. It's best described as a cream soda topped with marshmallow foam. You can get it cold, you can get it as a frozen slushy, you can get it hot, which I really like. They've even got a vegan topping now at Three Broomsticks and the Leaky Cauldron. If you are vegan, Ivana Lynch, who played Luna Lovegood, and you were unable to have Butterbeer in the past, they made that available. They've extended it to fudge and potted cream and ice cream. And now, from now through the end of April, you can celebrate your love of Butterbeer with some new special treats, including limited time Butterbeer flavored caramels and Butterbeer flavored popsicles. And they've also got a special silver Butterbeer Stein, a collectible cup that you can purchase. And if you're out in Hollywood, pretty soon you're going to be able to enjoy the Florian Fortescue's soft serve ice cream that we've had in Diagon Alley in Orlando for years. They're putting a tiny little ice cream parlor inside Honey Duke's out there in Hollywood. And that hopefully is going to last well past this Butterbeer celebration, which ends, like I said, April 30th. So Blake, like I said, I am first and foremost a hot Butterbeer fan, especially in the morning, especially if you order a cup of hot Butterbeer and you also order a side of fire whiskey. And then like the bar. Okay. So like, they're not allowed to put it in there for you, but if, okay, like you tell the bartender, like, look, there's Voldemort, and you point off to the side, and when their back's turned, you like put the fire whiskey in the hot Butterbeer. Breakfast of Triwizard Champions. That's all I gotta say.
I was gonna say, that's pretty early for that.
Hey, you know, some of these mornings, if you're rope dropping Hagrid's, you gotta be up, like, you know, before the sun. By the time you get off that first ride, it might be noon. Who knows? You know, it's time. That's right? True. What about you? What is your favorite Butterbeer?
I do like the hot Butterbeer best, I think, but the weather just so often, especially in Orlando, just doesn't cooperate with that.
There are days when hot Butterbeer is a bad idea. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
I do think, though, that this Butterbeer popsicle sounds, at least the potential of that sounds like a
cookie. Yes, I have got to get over there and check one of those out. I've actually got family, thoughts and prayers, who are making their first visit to Universal with the kids over spring break. So we'll be hanging out in the Wizarding World with about a billion other people this week. And I think I'm going to have to, especially if the temperature heats up this week towards the weekend, I am definitely going to need one of those Butterbeer popsicles to stay cool. Yeah, I the only butterbeer that I really can't stand personally is the butterbeer fudge. It is so sickeningly sweet. The other butterbeers are definitely sweet. In fact, I like the frozen a little better than the cold because it's like the coldness may like numbs your tongue and it isn't quite as sugary. But the fudge is just like instant diabetes to me. Like I can't do that
I
fudge.
can see that. I can see
Yeah.
that.
The potted
I
cream
recently
though.
had Harry Potter and the Cursed Child on Broadway, and
Oh.
they were selling bottled butter beer I
Yes.
never had before. I'm not sure if it do they sell that in the parks?
So they do not sell those in the parks. Those are sold at New York's Harry Potter store. And at the show, and you can also get those at the Warner Brothers Harry Potter
Okay.
making of tours that they have in London and Japan. You can actually order those. They will ship those to you.
Oh, okay.
So from I have a bottle of that that I've kept in my fridge for years, never
Wow.
but from what I understand, it basically tastes like the base of the butter beer, but it doesn't have the foam topping.
Yeah, a little bit. It was one of those things where, like, well, I can't not try it, you
What did
know?
you think?
It was okay. It
Yeah.
was I it was mine was served just at room temperature. It definitely
Oh,
it needed to be.
no. Yeah, no. I mean, maybe that's the authentic British way. Like they drink their beer, room temperature and their butter beer. But, ooh, no. It's got to at least be chilled, right?
Yes, for
Yeah.
sure.
All right. If you give a call to MEI Mouse Fan Travel, they will help hook you up with a trip to Universal in Hollywood or Orlando, and you can drink your fill of butterbeer or head on over to our YouTube channel where we have a video where we taste tested every type of butterbeer available. With the exception of these brand new seasonal offerings. So go check them out and then let us know which one you like. Next up, we are heading across the pond to Disneyland Paris to talk a little about this bizarro new Alice in Wonderland show that is coming. We teased this a few months ago when we first heard and got some initial concept art that they were turning the old Lights, Motors, Action, or there's a French version of Lights, Moteurs. I can't pronounce the French version of it, but basically the same old car stunt show that used to be in the Hollywood studios in Walt Disney World back before it got torn down for Galaxy's Edge. They are putting a new Alice in Wonderland show in the stadium used for that show in Paris, and they are somehow mashing up the Queen of Hearts and the Mad Hatter with BMX bicycle stunts and a rock and roll battle of the bands. Curiouser and curiouser, as Alice might say. Okay, so here's what we know. We've got some concept art, we've got some character descriptions. The show, which will start this spring, invites audiences to join Alice, the Queen of Hearts, and other favorite Wonderland characters in this new Walt Disney Studios Park show, which will feature acrobats and BMX bikers defying the laws of gravity, performing high-flying tricks and a battle of the bands, with Alice and the Queen meeting in a supercharged pop and rock face-off. And you want one more twist? This is a choose-your-own-adventure audience participation show where the crowd will help the Mad Hatter pick who wins and determine the ending of the show. There's a lot going on here, from the very edgy modern costume designs to the mashup of different talent. Listen, I'm sure everyone involved in this is very skilled, and they're going to have some amazing talent on stage. But this sounds like a lot to cram into one show. What's your hot take on this one?
So it's not quite, it's definitely not the animated versions of these characters, but it's
No.
also not quite all the way into the Tim Burton live action either. It's like some middle ground in between, it seems like.
Yes. Yeah. It's some kind of like bizarro. It's almost like a cosplay or a bounding version of these characters. Mm-hmm. Like maybe they didn't quite have the rights to any particular version, so they're just going to come up with something that reminds you of the characters without being specifically associated with any particular version of them.
It kind of feels like something that in like 10, 15 years, people in theme park communities will kind of be like, Disney was just different.
They yeah, had to be. The, well, yeah. You know, the thing that it does most closely remind me of is something that I actually have like a guilty pleasure soft spot for, which was the Mad Tea Parties that they used to throw in Disney California Adventure. We're going to be talking about DCA dance parties a little bit later, but this, like the look, the vibe of it, really reminds me. And if you never got to experience the Mad Tea Party or the Electronica parties for Tron that they did, you definitely had to be there. It was a vibe. It was definitely a vibe. So we are just as anxious as you are to see how this show actually comes out. It's starting this spring. So MEI, Mouse Fan Travel, if you want to check out that Electrical Sky Parade we talked about earlier and this thing, then they'll help you plan that trip to Paris. The only thing I got to say, though, I always say this every time we talk about Disneyland Paris, from my experience visiting there, if you're going to Disneyland Paris, make sure you also budget plenty of time to visit Paris. Because the real Paris is something that you should definitely see, even more so than Disneyland. So,
it's a huge venue too. There, the
yeah, it's a massive, massive stadium. So yeah, it was one thing when you had cars driving back and forth. I'm hoping that those BMX bikers and acrobats don't get lost in that huge stadium. But. So speaking of Disney, this one almost could have been our big story for the week, but we've got another main story instead. This one is going to sit in the news in the queue, but it is a big one. Disney has given us some more information about that $60 billion investment it is planning on making in its attractions around the world over the next year. And we have found out, at least they have announced, 50% of that $60 billion is going into what we would call the theme parks and the resorts. So half of that $60 billion that we've been talking about is being allocated for the parks and resorts. 30%, $18 billion, is going towards what they call tech and maintenance. And we can chat a little later about what exactly that means. And then $12 billion is devoted to the cruise line and other businesses. This is kind of, we've gotten lots of numbers thrown out in different forums recently. And so we can't quite say exactly, you know, when they refer to one pool of money, if they're talking about the same pool of money when they discuss something else. But if we start digging into these numbers, and Blake wrote this article that we are talking about that you can find on our website. So maybe I'll let him point out some of the interesting things. But the thing that really jumped out at me is how much money might end up going to Disneyland versus how much money in this $30 billion pot might end up going to Disney World. We've had a bunch of different presentations. There's an annual shareholder meeting coming up soon. So there's been a lot of investor presentations, investor calls. And we've kind of had some conflicting or overlapping numbers thrown out there. But the one that I wanted to get Blake's input on is we've heard a number of $1.9 billion for the Disneyland Forward, this big, ambitious expansion of Disneyland park, Disneyland resort. And at the same time, Iger recently talked about $17 billion going to Walt Disney World. So that was, those were two numbers that really jumped out at me. And I was wondering, Blake, as you've been putting this article together, what's jumped out at you?
Yeah, there's kind of a lot of things overlapping at the same time. You have, as you mentioned, this kind of tension that Disney is trying to face toward the April 3rd shareholders meeting, where they're trying to retain their board of directors, and an outside firm is trying to install two different board members. So that's where this information is kind of coming from. Disney trying to get ahead of that vote on April 3rd of shareholders and saying, this is our plan for how we want to spend this money. But then you also have, like the outside firm mentions, well, what is their direct response to Epic Universe? You have these long-term timelines. They said that this will be over the course of 10 years, but they haven't said quite specifically. We've had two or three of these, like, well, this is how we could spend it. We have the Beyond Big Thunder, the Dino Land, all that kind of stuff. But no,
we keep getting blue sky teases. You know, they have tempted us by showing, oh, look at World of Frozen in Hong Kong. We could do something like that. Look at Fantasy Springs in Tokyo. We could do, or we could do Zootopia. But they have not been so aggravatingly careful, especially with Disneyland, of every piece of art. Every concept is so vague and so changes every time that, like, we can't pin down exactly what would go where. They just keep teasing us.
So with all that said, I mean, definitely all eyes, I think, are on April 3rd is the annual shareholders meeting, which you can listen to online, regardless if you have a stock in Disney or not. And then D23 is in August. So not to say that they have to, they've made big announcements outside of huge events like that, but definitely I would expect some pretty big news out of both of those.
Well, I can tell you that I write my books, the Unofficial Guide series, and I've got big deadlines coming up in April and August. And I know that they know that because they always plan their big announcements exactly after I have to finish writing something. So then I have to try to scramble and revise. So I'm sure that is exactly why they have planned for those dates. But if you are not a Disney shareholder, if you do not personally own individual shares of Disney stock, you might have been insulated from this. But if you are a shareholder, you have been getting lots of mailings. You've been getting different colored pieces of paper that have been told, return this ballot, return that ballot. For a long time, Disney mostly had a very friendly board that was appointed or reappointed each year without a lot of controversy, until you got to the late Eisner years, and you kind of ran into the whole Save Disney movement. And ever since then, we've had a lot of, every few years, Trian Investments or Trian Partners, Nelson Peltz, who's now teamed up with Jay Rizzullo, who used to be a Disney Parks chairman. All these different competing groups with their own opinions of what Disney should be doing and trying to shake up the board. Impose their own plan. So this is really a lot of money has been spent on trying to influence shareholders this time. Honestly, I think it's unlikely that, Disney's preferred board is not going to be reelected, but this might be the best fight that they've had to put up in quite a long time. And that might prompt them, having that pressure might prompt them to be more ambitious, reveal more information, do more things to try to get shareholders juiced up and on their side. So we will see. We will definitely see, but it is a really interesting time. We definitely had, under Bob Chapek's reign, a retraction, looking to cut spending as much as possible. And this is a huge boost over what they have been spending. The question is it enough, and is it going to yield products quickly enough to compete with Universal's Epic Universe? Because I think no matter what Disney announces now, I think we can all agree that 2025 is going to going to belong to Universal, at least in the Orlando market. But yeah, they're talking about this turbocharging Disney's strategic investments. It's a word that Bob Iger has specifically used, and Josh DeMauro also used the word turbocharge. And yeah, personally, of all the possibilities, I'm really looking forward to what could happen to the Disneyland Resort, because it's they've gotten the first round of approval from the Anaheim city. It's moving forward to the city council. The planning committee approved. Now the city council's got to approve. I think there's a really good chance of that going through and us seeing some real big expansion coming to Disneyland. And like you mentioned, D23 is going to be the next big opportunity for them to give us an info dump that will upend all of my book chapters.
Brilliant. I feel like I also don't really have a grasp of like,
yeah, what can you buy for that? You know, we talked, you know, the number that's been tossed around was about $1 billion for each of the Galaxy's Edges. So, and I'm hearing about roughly $5 billion or so, $5 or $6 billion is what they're going to spend on Epic Universe. So, you could build maybe, you know, four or five really good theme parks or a dozen really good lands. That'll go a pretty long way. When I was in Hong Kong Disneyland for the grand opening or the media preview of World of Frozen there, we got to talk briefly with Josh DeMauro off the record, and he would not commit to anything, but when we asked him about World of Frozen and Disneyland, he was just like, you know, $60 billion goes a long way. We've got a lot of things coming. So I'm really looking forward. It's going to be an exciting time to be a Disney theme parks fan. And, you know, I don't know if it ever would have happened if Universal hadn't stepped up with Epic Universe. So competition definitely always benefits the consumer.
Definitely. Sure. I mean, you see the whole influence of Wizarding World.
Yes. I mean, that was a game changer, not just for Universal, but the ripples through the whole industry, you know, we're still feeling. And personally, I would love them to build a Zootopia stateside, because looking into the complications of visiting Shanghai as a working journalist, I don't think that I'm going to be getting a visa to do that anytime soon. So I would like to be able to ride Zootopia somewhere on this continent. That would be great.
Which, by the way, your Hong Kong coverage was fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
So the whole like first time in Hong Kong plus all the Frozen stuff on top of that was very well done.
Oh, thank you so much. Appreciate
that. Website, if you haven't checked that out.
Yes, please check that out. And all right, so moving right along, let's hop from Disney to SeaWorld. Believe it or not, SeaWorld parks are turning 60 this year. And all three U.S. SeaWorld parks are going to be celebrating the brand's 60th anniversary with a celebration that kicks off on March 21st through the 24th. I think I'm going to be at SeaWorld Orlando for the kickoff here. But if you are a fan of the SeaWorld brand, you can visit SeaWorld San Diego, which opened on March 21st, 1964, as the first SeaWorld. Or you can stop by the sister SeaWorlds in Orlando, Florida, or San Antonio, Texas, because they are all going to be celebrating the anniversary under the slogan, "So Much More to See." And that's S-E-A, of course. It kicks off March 21st. 10 a.m. All three parks are going to open with opening ceremonies hosted by the executives of the parks, and you can get a free cupcake if you are a guest. You're also going to be able to meet Shamu, not the living Shamu, but the walk around character, costume character that used to be. I can remember them from back in the late 70s and 80s as a kid. I haven't seen them in years, honestly, but they are bringing back some rare walk-around characters, If you are in San Diego, they're coming to the Explorers Hub. Orlando's putting them in the Past Member Lounge, and San Antonio will have them meeting and greeting in the Chill Bar. They've got lots of merchandise and food for the anniversary, including a new Precious Moments figure. They are going to have some special experiences and other events celebrating the anniversary of the SeaWorld Parks, which recently renamed their corporate brand to United Parks and Resorts, which may be the single most generic name for a company I've ever heard. But United, you and confuse it with another U word. I'm going to still call them SeaWorld. Darn it. Blake, are you a SeaWorld fan? Do you plan on visiting any of the SeaWorld parks during this anniversary year?
So I have only been to SeaWorld Orlando twice and like 20 years apart. Oh. So I'm not super familiar with the parks. I've been I've been to the Tampa and Williamsburg Busch Gardens as well, which are under the same family. But
yep.
I'm not super familiar with the parks beyond those two visits and occasionally reporting on them. Mm-hmm. Like with this story,
you know, like I mentioned, I just visited Aquatica recently, and I was out there within the last month to see the construction on Penguin Trek, which is the new family coaster, took over the old Antarctica attraction, and that is opening up this spring. You know, they've also got that Catapult Falls launch flume coaster that we've talked about on the show opening that just opened at SeaWorld San Antonio. And they've got a new Jellyfish Experience Aquarium debuting later this year in San Diego. So I'm always impressed every time I go to SeaWorld. I'm not an annual pass holder. I don't write a book about SeaWorld, so I don't visit it as much as I do the Disney or Universal parks. I'm always impressed how they are constantly adding things. It seems like every year they're announcing another roller coaster or another big attraction. And they've also really been aggressive with expanding their different seasonal festivals, their food festivals, their concerts. I think they really appeal to a portion of the market here, especially the local market in Orlando, that's kind of been priced out of the Disney, certainly, and Universal to an extent. In a lot of ways, if you enjoy, you know, big roller coasters and animals, SeaWorld offers a lot of value. So it's good to see them celebrating 60 years. And you can also check out the anniversary parade that all three parks are going to be introducing this summer. If you want more information, especially information on the $60 ticket special on single day admission that they are currently holding, you can head on over to SeaWorld.com, check out the subsites for each of those parks, and also head to our YouTube channel and check out POVs and videos of the hard hat construction tours we've taken of those new SeaWorld attractions.
And I believe still ongoing is their Seven Seas Food Festival as well.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's just wrapping up.
Fifth anniversary. So like you said, they are doubling down. There's lots of concentric celebrations happening here.
Yeah, thank you for reminding me, because I think I still have a few items to punch on my sampler lanyard. So maybe I could bring that with me and get a few more items from their food festival before it closes up. Okay, now for our last piece of news in the queue, I am going to turn this one over to Blake because he recently got to take a behind-the-scenes visit at Carowinds, which, as he mentioned, is his home park, to check out a preview of the 2024 season. And it really sounds like they are trying to re-energize, revitalize, find a new sense of purpose in the park this year.
Yes. So no new actual rides this year, no new water slides in their park, which is pretty abnormal for them. Usually they do have at least something that's like, hey, this is new, come ride it. They do have some new things, but just no new rides or water slides this year. However, to their credit, 2023 was huge for them. They introduced 5 new rides. It's part of a new land. They had drones and fireworks every night, which is very abnormal for them. Usually they have fireworks on special events like 4th of July or Memorial Day, stuff like that. So to have fireworks every night plus 5 new rides, plus some of the stuff happening in the press last year with them, which I'll leave that at that. I feel like following that, they're honing in on really just 2024 is a year to tighten what's already here and invest in improving the guest experience, which I think I definitely saw in the
interest. So I believe in sports, we refer to this as a rebuilding year.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So what are some of the things that they are doing to improve the guest experience without investing in new iron? And I guess a lot of this revolves around the rebranding of one of their biggest rides, right?
Right. So some of this, I'm not sure you could kind of, I think it's open for interpretation about like, is it the chicken or the egg, like that kind of thing. But in any case, the Dale Earnhardt NASCAR branding from their Intimidator roller coaster, which opened in 2010, it's still the same exact roller coaster, same exact experience. However, Intimidator is now known as Thunder Striker.
Okay.
And the area surrounding it is now known as Thunder Road, which is a tribute to the former wooden roller coaster that was torn down in 2015.
So a throwback to their kind of retro history.
Yes, but still same roller coaster. There is like a backstory that they posted online with it. However, the queue itself is still pretty bare bones and more or less just a rename, and I believe some new paint on that coaster as well, but otherwise the same experience.
And I have not been on this coaster personally, so after 14 years, I know it's a big one. Does it still hold up?
It does. I personally prefer this one to Fury. It's still pretty tall, but it is about, I believe, about 100 or so feet smaller than Fury. Sure, and definitely less. This one is, you can, I think, I don't know what I'm trying. I prefer this to Fury.
All right.
And then I believe King's Dominion has an Intimidator as well, and they are similarly renaming theirs, but it's not Thunder Striker. I don't believe they've announced a new name for theirs yet.
So they've kind of adopted this Thunder Road theming, at least in the gift shop I see, and some carnival games around it. But the ride itself, it doesn't sound like they did a lot to like the queue or anything to extend that theme.
Correct.
Yep. And then there's some other refurbishments happening elsewhere. I noticed a bunch of closed attractions. What's happening there?
So Hurler, which is a wooden roller coaster there, they're rebuilding not the entire track, but they totally dismantled and rebuilt from the ground up one of its back turns there. So that's currently closed. I don't believe it has a reopening date announced at the moment. And I don't know if the intention there is to eventually rebuild the entire track or if this is just what they're doing for the time being and then kind of leaving it. But the coaster opened in 1994 as part of... when the park was still under Paramount ownership, this whole area was known as Wayne's World.
So the Hurler from Wayne's World.
So it retained that name. That's a little just kind of...
it's party time. Excellent. Yeah. and then it looks like a new fresh coat of paint going on Vortex. And they've got a Sally Dark Ride. You know, I'm always a Dark Ride person, and Sally makes this had a series of interactive Dark Rides. I don't know if this one ever had a Scooby-Doo theming. I know they had some with Scooby-Doo and some without. It looks like this one was without the Scooby-Doo theming, but you say that Boo Blasters on Boo Hill got some upgrades.
Yes, it opened. I'm not sure what year it opened, but it did open as Scooby-Doo and still very much feels, I think, like the colors and the color scheme and design throughout definitely feels indicative of kind of that Scooby-Doo graphic style. but now is no longer Scooby-Doo. But they basically redid all of the special effects, all of the interaction with the blasters is a lot smoother now. It is the best the ride has ever been. I was very impressed with that.
Excellent, excellent. And then there was something called the Aeronautica Theater. Used to have a Plants versus Zombies simulator. What's happening with that?
So, there's this big building for the back of the Aeronautica landing land, which opened last year, that was previously a simulator building used over the years for Plants versus Zombies, SpongeBob. For a time, it even hosted the Hanna-Barbera thing that at one time was at Universal.
Oh, wow. The old, Fantastic World of Hanna-Barbera simulator. Yes. Wow.
Yes. So the theater is still there. It wasn't used for anything last year. Now it seems like it will be used later in the summer for some of the local visiting chorus groups, like school groups, to perform. But I'm not sure. We still don't know what it looks like inside. If they revamped the inside, if they still have the simulator seats up in there, or what's going on in there. But that it seems to be that it will be used for something this year.
Gotcha. Gotcha. And the one little update to the Carolina Harbor Water Park that I really appreciate is that they said they've experimented with a new type of paving that isn't as hot on bare feet.
Yes.
Definitely. Did they let you test that out? I want to test that.
No, unfortunately not. But yes, definitely looking forward to that. I don't know if that's super common to other water parks already, or if
I'm trying to think of what it could be made out of. It's like a cooling pavement, because you know, like any pavement that sits out in the baking sun, that gets hot. That's why I love Volcano Bay at Universal so much, because they have little sprinklers that spray water on the pathways to cool them down. They've also, you know, they are backing off on that International Food Festival that they tried out. And that might have been a little too ambitious for their culinary team, but they instead looks like they've doubled down on kind of comfort food for the park year round.
Yeah, so the kind of what was told to us was, rather than only having this expansive menu of super unique items for only 2 weeks, which that festival was only 2 weeks when it was offered Grand Carnival, rather than isolating it to that time, have new menu items, but just have them available all year without the branding of a festival, basically.
Yeah, I can see especially if they don't have, you know, the staffing of like an Epcot to do, you know, that kind of festival booths, because that takes a lot of manpower to put on one of those festivals, both in the kitchen and out in the streets. So.
Mm-hmm. And the Stephen's cake was definitely incredible.
I love your description in the article that it would make Cookie Monster weep tears of joy. That definitely makes me want to. So describe this cookie cake that they've got.
Yeah, so it's cookie cheesecake. The base of it, rather than a traditional pie crust, it is ground up cookie flattened. And then the top of it is still more or less a traditional cheesecake material, but it has bits of chocolate chip cookie in it, topped with whipped cream, topped with cookie crumbs, topped with a half of a chocolate chip cookie. So really, really great. Just all around, like, this is, I will be eating this every time.
I think I would need to eat about 12 lactose pills to take one bite, but it would be worth it. It would definitely be worth it. And if you want to take your love of Carowinds home on your back, they've got tons of merchandise. A lot of it looks like it is featuring Charlie Brown and Snoopy. And they've also got some merch for the flagship coasters, but nothing for Thunderstriker quite yet, huh?
Correct. Yeah, and nothing left over from Intimidator either. So, but I think this is another great example of just tightening what's already there, especially in compared to years past. Like what you're seeing on the screen right now with all these different collections and merchandise that is very specific to Carowinds. Like it all says Carowinds, it's branded, it has the Peanuts characters. That is very much new territory relatively for Carowinds to kind of go this hard on their merchandise. So that's, it's cool to see that aspect of the park expanding as well.
Nice. And it looks like they were taking advantage of the cold weather by selling plenty of sweatshirts.
Yes, yes. The sweatshirts that say, I am freaking cold.
And finally, I know there was a lot of fear when Six Flags and Cedar Fair announced their mergers that the management, the ethos of places like Carowinds would get swallowed up by Six Flags. So can you say that you have seen any signs of that happening yet?
No, not at all. As I understand it, the deal is not yet final, and there are no, to my knowledge, there is nothing that is different or changed in the park as of this point that is a result of that merger. When it does merge, though, the new company will be called Six Flags. I guess Cedar Fair, their name will kind of not be around anymore, and they are relocating their main headquarters from Sandusky, Ohio, where Cedar Point is, to Charlotte, which is where Carowinds is. So I think that also kind of speaks to maybe their mentality and how they would like to approach investment and where they would like to invest going forward.
Yeah, well, I mean, there it is never a bad thing for a park to have the executives have it right in their backyard. Yes, because yes, they're going to see it firsthand. It's not just a number on a balance sheet. It's right there in front of their faces when you know something needs attention. So that would, I think that should definitely work out in Carowinds' favor. Throughout the 2024 season, they've got a bunch of special events coming up. Memorial Day weekend is when the water park and the live entertainment kicks off. They've got an illusionist coming back in June, and a daytime Halloween event coming up this fall. You can check out their website at carowinds.com, which includes their operating dates and hours, and sales for tickets, which start at only $40. And, you know, living here in Orlando, where you can easily spend $150 on a 1 day park ticket, the idea of getting a season pass for less than $100, that sounds like a pretty good deal.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we've got a video from your visits there up on our YouTube channel. So please go and check it out. This is one of those, someday I need to do like a, you know, kind of Southeast to Midwest trip where I hit everything from Silver Dollar City and Dollywood, Carowinds, and finally make my way up to like Kings Island and, you know, Cedar Point. That's, you know, I've done all the East Coast parks, I've done all the West Coast parks, but there's that kind of slice in the middle of the country that I've always flown over. And one of these days I got to do that road trip. Right. But this one is definitely on my bucket list.
So yeah.
Thank you so much for reporting on it for us. Absolutely. All right. Well, that brings us to the end of the news in the queue. But before we get into this week's main attraction, it's time to hear a word from our sponsors.
The Attractions Podcast is brought to you by MEI and Mouse Fan Travel. Whether your next vacation is a magical trip to the theme parks, an exciting adventure to the pyramids of Egypt, or just a relaxing cruise on the turquoise waters of the Bahamas, MEI Travel provides premium service and expert advice to help you get the most of your vacation. They are always free of any hidden fees or costs to you. Visit them at MEI-travel.com.
It's time for the main attraction!
Our main attraction is that Pixar Fest is returning to the Disneyland Resort from April 26th through August 4th. And we have the details on what is going to be part of this returning summer festival. They tried this festival a few years ago, it was a one-off. Did not expect to see it come back, but it is back. And it's going to include some returning activities plus some all new elements. So we're going to run down what is part of this celebration of Pixar films and Pixar characters. And it's going to start before you even get inside the park There's going to be a new 25-foot tall sculpture of Pixar characters in the Esplanade. And if you are one of those folks who has a Magic Band Plus, which are really not very popular out in California, I was basically the only person I saw wearing one. But if you got one, you're going to be able to interact with a Pixar-themed installation that they are putting over in California Adventure for this event. They've also going to have meet and greets with some Pixar characters, including, for the first time at the Disneyland Resort, Ember and Wade from Elemental. They've got some fun looking costumes. You'll be able to meet with them. But the big new attraction is Better Together, a Pixar Pals celebration parade. It's been way too long since we've had a brand new parade in Disney California Adventure. But we're getting one that is going to feature characters from Soul, Luca, and Turning Red. I think the highlight of this one is probably going to be Mei in her red panda form grooving with the boys from Four Town. the big finale is going to have some classic Pixar characters like The Incredibles and Mike and Sully from Monsters, Inc., plus the Toy Story gang. And then you're going to want to, after that daytime parade in California Adventure, you're going to want to hop on over to Disneyland Park, where they are bringing back Together Forever, a Pixar nighttime spectacular. This is going to have fireworks on most nights. Some nights it will just be projections and music, but it uses the projection mapping on Sleeping Beauty Castle and other locations around the park, along with some fun floating props. My favorite thing in this show is the house from Up with all the balloons that runs along that zip line between the castle and the Matterhorn Mountain. You can see this show, like I said, different spots around the park. It's really made to be seen on Main Street and the castle, but I actually prefer to go over to It's a Small World, because you can kind of see the projections better. The fireworks are a little closer and it's way less crowded. The other place that you can see it, they're going to be bringing back Fantasmic. And if you see the first show of the night in Fantasmic, you can stay put and see the show from the Rivers of America. So that's another good way of doing it. Over at the Hollywood backlot at Disney California Adventure, as we mentioned earlier, they're bringing back the dance parties. I used to love those Tron dance parties and the Mad Tea parties. So now they're going to do Club Pixar. It's going to be an interactive dance party with live performances, plus DJs, games, photo ops, and of course, very expensive alcoholic beverages. The last thing that in terms of entertainment is, it looks like they are going to finally be doing something in the Fantasyland Theater. They shut down the Tale of the Lion King show, which was really, I thought, one of the better shows that they've done in the last few years there. That's gone, but they're going to have a Pixar Pals Playtime Party. This is a high-energy show with interactive games, photo locations, and activities inspired by Pixar feature films. This doesn't sound like much to me. Maybe a place to take the kids and let them blow off steam, but not something that's going to be a major priority probably on your to-do list. Hey, they've got plenty of Pixar-themed food options. Troubadour Tavern, right outside the Fantasyland Theater, is going to have a Pixar menu. Paradise Garden Grill in California Adventure, and it looks like they're going to keep some of those food and wine festival marketplaces in California Adventure, keep them around to serve Pixar-inspired foods. Of course, there's merchandise. You can't have a Disneyland event without merchandise. It looks like there is a popcorn bucket patterned after the Pizza Planet truck, and I'm betting that is going to be the hot item on eBay. And if you really want to make Pixar Fest lasts 24 hours a day. You can spend your nights at the Pixar Place Hotel, where they have meet and greets with Bing Bong from Inside Out and live performances from on the piano by Joe Gardner from Soul. That is, if you can get a room, that hotel, since it's reopened, it has been packed. I have DVC points that are supposed to be good there that I have not been able to get a room. That used to be the cheap hotel at Disneyland, and now there's some days where it's more expensive than the Disneyland hotel. So,
Wow.
Let us know if you get to stay there. I haven't, so let me know how it is. did you get to experience the Pixar Fest the last time it was out, and are you looking forward to any of these events coming up this summer?
So I did get to go. Coincidentally, a Disneyland trip just coincided that summer of 2018. Like you said, like it maybe felt like a one-time thing, especially because at that time it coincided with the opening of Pixar Pier, so it felt like there's a reason for this. And now I guess maybe the tie-in is with the Pixar Hotel, but like you said, sure. Like that's already doing good business. So
yeah, it doesn't need any help right now.
I loved the fireworks. You said you preferred Small World. I guess I'd be interested to watch it there and see how different it was. I felt on Main Street, it was like, so cool.
Yes, it is absolutely designed first and foremost for Main Street. And you know, everyone wants to be in the hub. Everyone wants to be right in front of the castle, especially since the castle at Disneyland is way smaller than the castle at Disney World. When they do projection mapping on Cinderella Castle in Disney World, you can see it from all the way down Main Street. At Disneyland, if you are not in front of the partner statue, the trees block most of the castle. Mm-hmm. So, you know, everyone tries to cram into that spot in front of Sleeping Beauty Castle. And honestly, while the show is beautiful from there, it's not a good experience for me. Like, I don't like having to stake out a spot that long and invest that much time and be crammed up against strangers for that long. What I like doing on Main Street is kind of like hanging out in the candy shop, and then you sort of step out into the street, like towards the end of Main Street. You sort of slide in just at the last minute. Try not to stand in front of anyone, you know, short, but try to get as close to that rope. They kind of block off a pathway right around Coke Corner. If you can kind of inch your way towards that rope, you can sort of get a clear shot. But even then, it's a lot of work. Like yes, it's very immersive having all the projections on Main Street around you, but you've got to like devote a good chunk of your time. And then once it's over, the crush of people, because everyone wants to leave the park as soon as it's over. And it's like, if you want to go back in and ride something, you're like salmon spawning upstream.
That's true. Yeah.
So that's why I love, you know, even on the most crowded night, the area around Small World Plaza will be a lot less crowded. And then as soon as the show's over, you know, you can either, if they're not doing fireworks, you can slide into Toontown right after, and rides in there will be pretty quiet, or cut through Fantasyland, or even hop on the train and ride the train around. You've got so many options for, you know, dispersing there it's definitely, it's not quite as immersive having everything all around you. But I really like the experience. It's a lot more relaxed seeing it from Small World. So check that out for sure. Anything else on the agenda here that you'd put on the top of your list?
I'm curious to see how different the new Pixar, Better Together, Pixar
the parade,
Pixar,
yeah.
How different it is from the former Pixar Play Parade.
Well, you know, that Pixar Play Parade that ran in both California and also was a mainstay in I'm always going to call it Disney MGM Studios, no matter how long it's been Hollywood Studios, right? It had that earworm song. I wonder if there's going to be a little reference to that theme song from the old Pixar Play Parade, because that one stuck in my brain years after that parade ended.
I'm also curious, because so many of these characters are from newer movies. Some of them, you know, like Red Panda May has been in other parks, and this will be her Disneyland debut. But some of these to my knowledge, have not appeared in any Disney parks.
Right.
So, especially the whole Luca gang. We haven't seen them. But yes. I also wonder if they're actually characters or if they're just kind of figures on the float as they sometimes do.
Yeah, I'm curious. You know, we've got concept art here. But yeah, it's hard to tell who's going to be a face character, who's going to be a costume character, and who's going to be basically an animatronic or a puppet.
Right.
So yeah, I'm curious to see how they render all of these characters. It does seem like the floats themselves maybe are not on the scale of, you know, I still really miss Paint the Night. I think that, like, in terms of the scope and the scale, the impressiveness of those floats, I don't know if they've ever done anything like that. But also, that parade had a hard time making it through DCA, especially once they put the red car trolley electrical lines when they built out Buena Vista Street. I'm not sure you'd want to take the old Paint the Night parade through California Adventure anymore. So maybe they've strategically designed this to be a little more maneuverable.
Mm-hmm.
I'm definitely, I think my favorite's going to be this, Luxo Jr. lamp. You know, they've got a little baby version of him on top of the archway, on the bridge that leads to Pixar, Pier. And I love the animation he does. So if they have a full size, like a giant, larger than life size version of that, that's going to be fully articulated, I want to see that.
I believe, so I know that float in particular does seem to be recycled from, not the Disney version of Pixar
Play. Yes.
But one of the, yeah.
Yeah. And it looks like he's gotten a whole bunch of stickers stuck on him. All right. Well, this is coming up, as we said, starting April 26th, running all the way through August 4th, taking over the whole summer. And I will say, you know, looking at the statistics, we had a very busy fall, Halloween season and Christmas season, out of control at Disneyland. But summer season was surprisingly soft this past year. Attendance, spending, wait time, whatever measurements you want to look at, the summer was not the peak that it was years ago. Both in Orlando and also in Disneyland, I think that climate change could be part of that. It's really tough to be in the parks in July these days.
Mm-hmm.
I think that spending patterns and traveling patterns and school attendance patterns also have impacted that. The need to go specifically during summer break is maybe not as intense as it used to be. So it will be interesting to see if this Pixar Fest helps boost those margins and bring summer back to the busyness that it used to be.
And Disneyland won't have Tiana opening in
the correct. Summer, yes.
Well, whereas Florida, that's the big draw. For
that's another great point. Walt Disney World is advertising now the opening of Tiana's Bayou Adventure, which is the reimagining of Splash Mountain as a summer attraction now, whereas all we know at Disneyland is that it's happening later in the year. So without a major attraction to promote, they definitely want something to be a draw. So you are excited about this, head on over first to our website, attractionsmagazine.com, to read this article to get all the details, and our YouTube channel to see videos from the last Pixar Fest to get an idea of what the shows are like. And then check in with our friends at MEI and Mouse Fan Travel to plan that trip.
And I have a correction from something you said earlier. I have a text from my friend Michael who is
please correct me. Fact check. Yes.
Michael says, I got wrong when I said Cedar Fair headquarters is coming to Charlotte. He said it has been here in Charlotte for a few years now.
Well, Cedar Fair headquarters, but Six Flags headquarters are going because they previously were not.
True. Yes.
So you are mostly correct. I'm gonna give you an A minus on.
Okay.
Seven, eight points. All right. Well, that is going to bring us to the end of our big story for this week. Before we wrap things up, we want to check in with some of the folks. And we have had quite a few folks leaving some thoughts in the chat. Some of the folks who stopped in to say hello were Michael McKay saying hello. Hello, Michael. Caleb Smith wondering if there's any updates on Tarzan Treehouse overhaul for the Swiss Family Robinson Treehouse at Magic Kingdom. I can confidently say that we finally kicked Tarzan out of the Swiss Family Treehouse at Disneyland's Adventureland, and I do not expect Tarzan to be showing up in Magic Kingdom's Treehouse anytime soon. If you want to see a Tarzan Treehouse, I believe you're now going to have to go to Hong Kong, though that treehouse was closed for a major refurbishment when I was there, and I'm not sure if it's reopened quite yet. Caleb also wanted to say that he's a huge fan of both of us, but more so Blake. Gee, what am I, chopped liver? No, I can understand. After spending one episode here with Blake, I can understand being a fan of him too. I have not heard anything about a sandwich shop coming to Hogsmeade. I just know about the ice cream shop that we talked about coming to California's Hogsmeade. I'll keep an ear out for a sandwich shop. I don't remember them eating a lot of sandwiches in the books, but I will say that if you want a handheld snack in Hogsmeade, go to the Magic Neep and ask for the vegan pasty. It's a little pastry pocket filled with vegan meat, and it is great. So Magic City Mayhem, a friend of ours, checking in, and he says that the image concept art of Alice looked like she was about to venture into the Spider-Verse, and I just love that. Yes, I can totally see that. He also lets us know that Knott's is doing a Snoopy and Beatles mashup. That sounds pretty darn cool. Michael Bingham chiming in. Yes, he remembers that mad tea party that I was talking about at Disney California Adventure, and he also thought it was a lot of fun. Caleb voicing his enthusiastic support for Disneyland Forward. Mickey always advances, never retreats. Seeing what else have we got here. Jeremy dropping in some questions. Sorry, I'm hoping that I answered all of them for you. We just had a whole sorry, this is bad radio, but we just had a whole bunch of people who were just very enthusiastic in the chat. So thank you all so much for leaving your thoughts in the chat. Michael Bingham's going to get the last word. Paint the Night was awesome, and it's up there with the Lion King Celebration Parade back in the 90s. And where those Lion King Celebration floats wind up? Bueller? Anyone? Yes?
Festival of the Lion King.
Ding, ding, ding! Absolutely. If you miss the old Lion King Celebration Parade, Disneyland, just visit Animal Kingdom and check out the Festival Lion King Parade show. It's a great piece of trivia. All right. Thank you all so much. Please, thank you to our sponsors, MEI and Mouse Fan Travel. Thank you to all of you for hitting like and subscribe and giving us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you happen to listen to us. Please follow us at attractionsmagazine.com and search for Attractions Magazine on all your favorite social media accounts. Blake, this is your time to shout yourself out. Where can folks follow you on social media?
I am on X as Blake_242. And Instagram as Blake.242.
And you can find me on all the socials at Skubersky. And you can find my books at The Unofficial Guides or at TheUnofficialGuides.com. And until next week, hopefully Carly will be back. But if not, Blake, we would be happy to have you come back anytime. Thank you so much for helping out. And until next time, we hope you folks stay safe, try something new, and most importantly, have fun. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.